maybe you have a diary or a calendar of important dates. I need one of those. Maybe you keep a journal of things that you don't want to forget. Or maybe you have precious moments captured in photographs. You might have treasures that you've collected while visiting different places, or maybe a taonga that has come to you that used to belong to someone that you want to remember. Or maybe there's an orator in your whānau who can always be counted on to recall the family mischief and those significant stories that your family love to tell. Well, here's the thing. God doesn't need a diary. He doesn't need to remember things, you know, prompts to remember things. But in his journal, commonly known as the Bible, he has told us over and over again, as we've been hearing, how important it is to remember. Here's some of the instructions. Take care lest you forget. Remember the former things of old. Remember the deeds of the Lord. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years. And those 40 years, obviously, talking about the journey of the Israelites from Egypt to the Promised Land. Now, God doesn't need photographs of those 40 years or trinkets collected along the trip to remember what happened in those times. But he definitely is the creator of miraculous moments, a collector of precious treasures, and the ultimate storyteller. In fact, all of history is his story, right? So I want to take us this morning to a particular part of his story. And we're in, if you want to read along, we're in Exodus this morning. Exodus chapter 14, and without knowing, Christina picked as our very first song, Leaving Egypt. She talked about crossing the Red Sea, and this is where we're landing this morning, in Exodus chapter 14, and I'm going to read from verse 10. As Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and panicked when they saw the Egyptians overtaking them. They cried out to Moses. Oh, hang on. I think I need to start back. I need to start in verse 8. I've got to give you a little bit of the preamble. Right, going back to verse 8. Here we go. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, so he chased after the people of Israel, get this, who had left with fists raised in defiance. The Egyptians chased after them with all the forces in Pharaoh's army, all his horses and chariots, his charioteers and his troops. The Egyptians caught up with the people of Israel as they were camped beside the shore near two unpronounceable places. As Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and panicked when they saw the Egyptians overtaking them. They cried out to the Lord and they said to Moses, "Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? What have you done to us? Why did you make us leave Egypt? Didn't we tell you this would happen while we were still in Egypt? We said, 'Leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians. It's better to be a slave in Egypt than a corpse in the wilderness.'" But Moses told the people, "Don't be afraid. Just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord himself will fight for you. Just stay calm." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the people to get moving. Pick up your staff and raise your hand over the sea. Divide the water so the Israelites can walk through the middle of the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians and they will charge in after the Israelites. And my great glory will be displayed through Pharaoh and his troops and his chariots and his charioteers. When my glory is displayed through them, all Egypt will see my glory and know that I am the Lord. Whew. You could probably tell by the way that I read those verses that I find it a little amusing in verse 10 and 11 that these are the same Israelites that only a matter of days earlier had left with their fists raised in defiance. And now, at the first sign of trouble, their memories are not serving them well. Right? They're not remembering their victory. They're not remembering all the ways that God has already worked on their behalf. And in fact, they're not even really clearly remembering their oppression, their years of oppression and slavery. In fact, they're claiming that they wanted to stay in Egypt. You know? Why did you make us leave? We said, leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians. What a load of rubbish, right? And their not remembering has shifted them. It's shifted them from a position of fists raised in defiance and victory to panic. Because our failure to remember always has a negative outcome. Moses, on the other hand, he speaks boldly to the Israelites in verse 13. Don't be afraid, just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Lord himself will fight for you, just stay calm, right? He's real bold, he's calm, he's telling them what needs to happen. And I go, wow, what a shift from back in Exodus chapter 3 when God first came to Moses and said, this is what's going to happen, right? And he's like, pick someone else. Do you remember that? It's one of my favorite passages because it's often my tendency, my go-to, is to be like, I don't think so. So I like Moses. But, you know, maybe after all his excuses and fear when God first came to him, maybe Moses is finally learning to let God's presence speak louder than his own insecurities. He's learning to call to mind and remember the right things. And yet, you know, despite knowing the right things to say and like preaching it to the Israelites, there's obviously this little residual, you know, some lingering of his own. Because in the very next verse, God says to Moses, why are you calling out to me? Tell the people to get moving. Okay, but God's coming to Moses and saying, why are you crying out to me? Okay, and then comes the instruction to pick up his staff and raise his hand over the sea. Okay, some dude called Carl Brittle, he talks about visiting a museum in Jerusalem and seeing this collection of unassuming wooden rods, in some kind of container. And on closer inspection, he discovered that the rods were covered in all sorts of markings and symbols from top to bottom. And he goes, oh, that's kind of curious. So he goes and he asks one of the curators of the museum about them. And in broken English, the curator says, oh, rods of testimony. So then another guy comes over and explains a little bit more that Israelite shepherds would often record God's protection and provision for them by marking their staffs in order to remember. So kind of like a early form of a journal, right? Rods of testimony. Now, Riley's been getting a little bit creative recently. I didn't actually ask him if I could do this, so too bad, don't tell him. He got creative and he made himself a tramping stick. Now the stick itself he brought back from his first tramp ever, and you can see he's added a wee handle here so it doesn't slip off his hand easily, and he's got a pointy end on it for extra grip. And at the moment it's only got one word carved into it, says adventure. But imagine something like this. I kind of imagine the staffs in the Bible something like this. Just a fairly unassuming wooden rod, maybe a little bit thicker than this one, I don't know. But now imagine it covered from top to bottom in symbols and writings and reminders of all of your significant God encounters. Cool, huh? So, get this. When God instructs Moses to raise his staff, pick up his staff and raise his hand over the sea that day, here's what he was really saying. Moses, take the testimony of my goodness and place it between you and the problem. Like, what a powerful image is that, right? That's a life-changing piece of advice right there. Moses is there with a bunch of freaking out Israelites. Like, not just a bunch, like, I don't know, how many were there? Thousands. Thousands of freaking out people, all like, why have you done this to us? And he's got a sea in front of him, an uncrossable sea. He's got a desert on one side. He's got mountains on the other side. And guess what? Behind is the whole of Pharaoh's army coming at them. And God just says, just take what you know about me. Take all the reminders that you've carved out for yourself of my faithfulness to you over the years and put that in front of your eyes. Let your rod of testimony capture your focus and not the problem that sits behind it. You might have heard the saying, don't tell God how big your problem is, tell your problem how big your God is. Have you heard that one? Okay, but we can only do that when we remember how big and good our God is. And here's where the importance of remembering comes in. I reckon that our unchanging God would give us the same piece of advice this morning. Take the testimony of his goodness and place it between you and whatever Red Sea you're facing right now. How could that one piece of advice change us? Imagine if we made that our life habit. You know, even just this week, there was one day that I was, let's just say, falling apart a little. And at the end of that day, I read this in John 16:33. Trusting in me, you will be unshakable and assured, deeply at peace. In this godless world, you will continue to experience difficulties, but take heart, I've conquered the world. And as I read that at the end of my day, I thought, ha, how different might my day have been if I'd remembered that at the start of my day instead of just coming to those words at the end of it. Because here's what remembering does. Number one, remembering shifts our gaze. Okay, so Moses is surrounded by moaning people. Can anyone relate? He's got challenges on every side. How about that one? And God just says, remember. Remembering cuts through the clutter and the chaos and the crazy. And it shifts our gaze back to our God who's bigger than all of it. Second thing remembering does is it builds our faith and it makes way for the miracle. Remembering is what enabled Moses to say, don't be afraid, just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you. It's remembering that built that faith. From back in chapter 3, oh no, send someone else to, come on, you know? It's remembering. And the third thing is that remembering encourages others because Moses didn't just part the waters for his own private escape. He might have been tempted, but his remembering led to a miracle that made way for an entire nation. So don't ever underestimate the power of your testimony. So in light of that, I want to take, I've written down a minute. It's going to take me much longer than a minute. But I want to take some time this morning to tell you two stories. If I had a rod of testimony, these stories would be on it. They will probably seem like silly stories. They involve this set of blue booties and this little knitted cardigan. Okay? Now, I've warned you. You might think my stories are silly and insignificant. But here we go. I am the youngest of three girls. I was the last to get married, the last to have kids. And so this cute set of beanie and booties was handed down through the family to me when Riley was born. And I loved them. I love them. I still do. Well, one day I got home from shopping, and when I got Riley in from the car, to my dismay, there was only one blue booty on one of his feet. And I rushed back out to the car, praying that the other one would just be sitting there on the seat. But after searching the car high and low, under everything, no booty. I considered going back to the shops, but I'd been right around the mall and into the supermarket, and I had no idea at what point on my trip the booty may have, you know, fallen off. So I said to God, I know it's just a booty, and I know that in the big scheme of things, it doesn't really matter, but I really liked that one. And if there's any way possible, I would love to get it back. I told Lee my sad tale, and I went to bed that night with one beanie and one blue booty on my coffee table. Here we go, just like that. When I woke up the next morning and went out to the lounge, there they were, still sitting there where I'd left them. Only the set was complete. There was one beanie and two booties. And I went running down to Lee, thinking he must have got up in the middle of the night and found it somewhere and put it there as a surprise for me. I said, "Where did you find it?" But he had no idea what I was talking about, because he didn't find the booty. God did. I told God if there's any way I'd really like it back, and he made a way. I've got no other explanation for that. Okay, around the same time, I was using this cardigan. Riley was once this little. I was using this cardigan to put Riley to bed at night. And one night, as I got him ready for bed, I noticed that one of the buttons was missing. And again, it was a piece handed down through my family to me. I looked all around for the missing button, hoping that I'd just find it in the bedroom somewhere on the floor. For a whole week, because you can't see from where you are, but they're Peter Rabbit buttons. So I knew that the likelihood of finding a replacement Peter Rabbit button was pretty slim. For a whole week, I put Riley to bed in this cardigan, doing up one button because the top button was missing. Until one night, I put the cardigan on him and two buttons were there. Now, I know that I did not just not see that button for a whole week. I know that I'm not that stupid. And again, I have no explanation but God. Now, you know, even this week as I typed up these stories, they still have the power to bring tears to my eyes, because 16 years later, they still remind me that my God, one of his names is El Roy, which means the God who sees me. Because what I haven't told you is that at that time, Lee had been made redundant, Riley was 4 months old, and things were tight. And what God was saying to me in those two miracles was, if I care about a blue booty and a missing Peter Rabbit button, don't you think I can take care of the rest? That's what those seemingly insignificant stories tell me about my God, and that's why I remember. In fact, these stories have been passed on to my kids now. We were remembering just the other day, and Lucas said to me, "Have you still got those?" That's what made me bring them out, so that I could show them to you. I've told those stories to the kids in Amped. Now they've heard them again because they're sitting in here this morning. And now I've told them to all of you. Because as insignificant as they seem, remembering, it matters. Our remembering and our testimonies, they encourage people. You know, you could be forgiven for sitting there this morning thinking, seriously, a booty and a button. Like, is that your best stories? Have you any idea of the real challenges that I'm facing right now? Like, you know, I would forgive you if you're sitting there thinking that. But here's the thing. I reckon that we form our habits in the daily, like the big and the little matters. How we deal with the little everyday stuff forms our responses to the big stuff. The idea that the Red Sea moments are the only ones that really count, like that thinking, that can cause us to overlook so much of God's working in our lives. Life isn't made up of Red Sea moment after Red Sea moment. The Egyptians traveled, their journey took them 40 years from Egypt to the Promised Land. And there was only twice that there was a moment like the Red Sea moment, over 40 years. So life isn't made up of that. In fact, you know, a lot of the miracles that God brought about on behalf of the Israelites were far more mundane. In Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 5, God says, "For 40 years I led you through the wilderness, yet your clothes and sandals did not wear out." Okay, now here's the thought. When we fail to acknowledge, we forget. We see what we look for. So if we're not looking, we won't see. If we're not looking, we'll miss it. And if we're not choosing to remember, we'll forget. Because in my journal this week, I found that at that time I had written down something about the booty, the cardi, and the sock. No idea what the sock was. I can't remember that story. Because if we're not choosing to remember, we do. We forget stuff. Worse still, we can start to complain about the very things that God has intended as gifts in our lives. Okay, because I don't know about you, but I quite enjoy adding a new item to my wardrobe once in a while. And I'm not sure if after 40 years, the gift of the same clothes and the same sandals would have felt, you know, like something I was ready to praise God for. Do you hear me? And see, that's just it. Like, I'm so quick to criticize those grumbling, ungrateful Israelites. Oh my gosh, they're so quick to doubt. They're so quick to complain. Until my words all of a sudden become a mirror reflecting me back to myself. Because I'm not that different. We can completely miss the work of God in our lives for a few reasons. Number one, because we're simply not looking for it. Number two, because we're looking for our big Red Sea moment when it's a strap on your 20-year-old sandals kind of a day. Or number three, because we've let disillusionment with that prayer that God didn't answer how we thought he would. Or that disappointment that we had, we've let that completely cloud our lens. And the disappointment has robbed us of our expectancy and our joy. See, we get to choose what we write on our rod of testimony. We get to choose what we hold on to. We could think of it like having a written script of our day. And for those of you that have been studying recently, I don't know how you study these days, but I used to get out my highlighters, you know, and I'd highlight my notes. I don't know, probably it's all on laptop these days. I'm showing my age. But, you know, like if you had a written script of your day, which bits are you going to highlight? Which bits are you going to choose to draw your attention to? You know, is it... we climbed Mount Tamahunga as a family a few years ago, and halfway up, someone said,
"Whose idea was this anyway?"
You know, like, are we going to remember the pain of the track or that irritating stone that got in the shoe? Or are we going to hold on to, I don't know, family time, the view from the top, which actually isn't that great from the top of Mount Tamahunga. But anyway, you get my point. We get to choose what we hold on to. We get to choose the bits that we highlight. We get to choose what we remember. And choosing to remember, can I just say, is not a denial of tough times. It's not that you have to, I'll just forget that that bit happened, because I don't think, like, when you're following God, you're not supposed to have days like that. Yeah, you do have days like that. But our trust in God is not subject to circumstance. When we choose to remember, we shift our gaze to Jesus. And so then our faith holds in spite of circumstance. Because Joshua 21:45 tells us that despite all the challenges the Israelites faced along the way, get this, not a single one of all the good promises the Lord had given to the family of Israel was left unfulfilled. Not a single one. Everything he had spoken came true. That's our God. So, God's talking to you this morning. What's he calling to your mind? Is there a particular part of his character or an encounter from the past? Listen to him. He's saying, hey, don't forget. Remember. In Deuteronomy 6, there's some great suggestions on how we can remember. These verses are talking about remembering God's commands, but it's the same principles. So in verse 7 to 9 of Deuteronomy chapter 6, it says this: repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you're at home, when you're on the road, when you're going to bed, when you're getting up. Do you get the drift? It's again and again in many different contexts. Tie them to your hands and wear them on your forehead as reminders. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Okay, don't start freaking out on me. Let me just explain a little bit here. So the first way to remember is to talk. And all the women said, amen, because we love to talk, right? But it's talk about your God stories, like I just did. Talk about, testify to the work that God's done in your life. Acknowledge and share the God moments in each day, repeatedly and constantly, as you get up, as you go to bed, as you eat dinner together, as you walk along the road. Talk about the stuff that matters. Remember it, acknowledge it, testify. Okay, the second thing that talks about, you know, tying them on your hands and wearing them on your forehead. I'm not trying to start a new trend. There was a cultural context for that. But basically, the invitation is to get creative. Use symbols and visual reminders. There's other examples in the Bible of people setting up symbols of remembrance. So in Genesis 28, Jacob sets up a pillar in Bethel to remember a significant dream that he'd had. In Joshua 4, the Israelites take 12 stones the second time that they crossed a river. That time it was the Jordan River. And they took up 12 stones to create an altar after crossing the river. In 1 Samuel 7, Samuel sets up a stone and names it. He names it the Stone of Help, after God helped them to win the victory over the Philistines. So use symbols and visuals in whatever way that helps you to remember God's goodness. And finally, write them. whether it's like in the verse, literally on your doorposts and your gates, could do that, or whether you keep a journal, whether you publish a book for everyone to read. I think there might be some authors in this room this morning, so that word's for you. If it's for you, you just take that. Or whether it's, you know, I've made this habit, it's a pretty cool habit if I say so myself, but of writing a gratitude prayer at the end of every year, so that at least once in the year I'm looking back on all of God's faithful goodness to me over that year, and I'm making a record of it. However you choose to do it, find a way to keep records of God's goodness, because remembering matters. We're going to finish this morning with Jesus' invitation to take communion as a way of remembering. So in Luke 22 verse 19 it says, "Do this in remembrance of me." And if there is one story in all of his story, if there is one story that shouts God's love in a way you can't deny, it's this one. If there is any testimony of his goodness worth remembering, it's this one. His life given for us. That moment on the cross when Jesus gave his perfect life so that I could know freedom, so that I could exchange my guilt and shame and bad habits and addiction and all the things that keep me bound, and I can exchange it for life in all its fullness through Jesus. Christina and the team are going to come up and lead us in one more song. And in a moment, I will, invite you guys also to make your way up to collect. We'll just kind of come down the edges and then back up the middle. But as the team comes and leads us in worship, I'd love you to come and collect these symbols. That's what they are, visual symbols, reminders. Sorry, I'll clear out of your way in a sec so that you can actually do what you need to do. But in your own time, as we worship, in your own time as we worship, like, take this bread or the cracker if you're gluten-free and the cup and remember. Remember Jesus. Remember his sacrifice. Remember what his death and resurrection has accomplished. Remember his instructions, his example, his promises, and above all, remember his love. Because it's remembering Jesus that remembers our broken places. Yeah. Thanks, guys.